Super Hungry, the podcast, and I am your host, Virginia Anson Gruber, and got a new episode. It's a new day. I'm recording this on a Sunday. I think I'm a little bit food drunk, to be honest, because I just ate like my weight in like garlic dip and pesto from the farmer's market, so it's been a good day for me so far. I ate it on pita, but it was really just an excuse to not eat it directly, you know, with a spoon, because I don't need that kind of judgment in my life. So I ate it with pita, so I'm even more full and sleepy. So this is gonna be kind of a short intro. The live show was so great. I had such a fun time. Thank you to everybody who's listened to that episode. It was like the greatest time ever, honestly. Like, I can't say enough about it. To have my first live show sell out was incredible. There was over 250 people there. It was at my alma mater. A lot of feels, a lot of Virginia, this is your life feelings for that. So it was a really great event. Special thanks to Jonathan Tasman and Snow Monster Studios for producing that event, and the Park Avenue Inn, and LuLaRoe, ZL, and Liz for sponsoring. You guys were amazing. LuLaRoe, ZL, and Liz are on Facebook, and they are my vendors for LuLaRoe. And so all of the photos that you see on Facebook taken by the amazing Bob Howard, also special thanks to Bob Howard. That dress is LuLaRoe. It's gorgeous. It's so beautiful. So if you check out them and you find them on Facebook, you basically ask to join their group. And then if you send Liz a special message with the code Jackson, you'll actually get a special discount off of your first order. Jackson. Just tell them Virginia and Super Hungry, their podcast, sent you. And again, special thanks to Park Avenue Inn for sponsoring the event and putting us up. This stunning 1840s antebellum mansion that's a B&B. It's like the only one in downtown Tallahassee. So if you're a Seminoles fan or like an alumni like I am, and you're trying to go in town and not really like be around those damn kids, man, get yourself to the Park Avenue Inn, because it's just stunning and it's got everything you want in a B&B. And has all like the luxury of like just quiet and private and all original antiques in the house. I honestly can't say enough about it. So thank you to our sponsors and Snow Monster Studios and Jonathan Tasman for producing. Special thank you to my husband, Stephen Pell, for shooting the video as well, and Bob Howard for taking photos. I'd also like to give a special shout out to a couple other people who have been involved. Amy Runk, Chandler Reeder, Alexander Rodriguez, Christopher Bell, Sydney Landis, who designed our gorgeous logo and poster and is just a graphic design extraordinaire, Alex Austin, Robert Kokenhauer, who wrote a really lovely piece with his partner on for the, basically FSU has like a radio station, and then that radio station is like a radio magazine, kind of like This American Life, called Vox Populi, and they did a really sweet just 10-minute piece on the live show. So I'm actually going to link that on this episode's post just so you guys can check that out too. It's really beautiful, and those kids are really got a good future in radio journalism ahead of them. So, and that's just not being me being biased, because it's about me, although it never gets old to hear people tell you that they like you. So it was honestly like, it was a great show. I really couldn't have asked for more, so I'm really happy. Things are all good, just, you know, working, freelancing, coordinating, and planning for our move, which is December 19th, heading to Grand Rapids, move in the show. That's the big news if you haven't heard it. December 19th, Super Hungry the podcast packs up her show, her car, her cat, and her husband, and to Grand Rapids, Michigan, to plant down some roots and really just immerse in the community and culture there. So look out for more episodes for this season of Super Hungry the podcast. Each season is gonna have 13 episodes, so we've got a lot more of season 2 to go, and then we are making the move to a new city, and I'm very excited, not at all nervous or annoyed that I have so much stuff that I have to go through. I'm very zen. I am figuring it out. So how are you guys? I hope you're well. I hope that you have had good Halloween preparations. I still don't know what I'm going to be. It'll be a mystery, I guess, to us all, like Donald Trump. I will keep you guessing and in suspense. Ah, and with that, I will let you know that we're going to listen to the new episode, which is I'm interviewing my friend Justin Dre, who's a brilliant comedic actor we met years ago. He was one of the leads on Zack Stone Is Gonna Be Famous on MTV, and he is now one of the leads on the new CMT show, Still the King, which is written and produced and starring Billy Ray Cyrus. And Justin actually plays Starman, who is Billy Ray's manager. Billy Ray's character was a once sought-after and super popular country star, and his fall from grace in the pilot shows him basically as one of the best Elvis impersonators in the country, and Justin plays his manager, Starman. So check it out if you have CMT. It's super funny. It just got renewed for a second season. Justin is honestly one of the funniest people I've ever met, and that's why this episode's a little bit longer. It's not the normal hour. It's like an hour and a half. It's also co-hosted by my really great friend Morgan Rodner of the Grand MacGuffin podcast, who I just wanted to have him co-host. I'm gonna, you know, have a co-host every once in a while just to kind of switch it up and throw a little, you know, mix into the format. And he's so great. So check out Grand MacGuffin podcast. They're launching a bunch of new projects, including GMG TV and a bunch of other things. So enjoy this conversation. Justin gets really candid about, you know, making it in LA and what it's like to move and pursue your dreams, but also create your dreams in the community that you're in. He did a lot of stuff back east and then moved out here and worked at Ralph's before he got his full-time job at MTV. For my friends who don't know what Ralph's is, it's a grocery store made famous in The Big Lebowski. So it's a really great episode. Justin's so goddamn funny. So please enjoy this new episode of Super Hungry the podcast with my friend Justin Dre.
Yeah, this is I am a podcast virgin here.
But
a PV.
That makes me really excited that like this is what you've chosen to like.
Well,
pop that cherry.
Yeah, absolutely. With the long list of people that were banging my door down, I definitely chose
Justin,
you.
Justin.
Yeah, it was like, please come do our podcast,
sir,
please.
Sir. Oh, sorry, did I just ruin, recording stuff?
Please come do our podcast, please, please.
I did it for the sake of the bit, though, Morgan. It was fine.
But I mean, isn't that, that's like the actors.
Anything for the sake.
Was it the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? I can't go to that audition. I have a podcast to record.
Oh, yeah. That's the guy who's like Titus's like
rival.
Do you watch Kimmy Schmidt?
You know, I watched some of the first season.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, such a like Tina Fey whore though that literally anything that she makes, I'm like, I'll watch it. I'll consume it.
I love, you know, I got to be honest with you though. I get a little overwhelmed by how much new stuff there is. Everybody's like, this is beautiful. This is great. This is great. And I'm like, my DVR is already full. I got Chopped on there.
Chopped.
You know, I cannot, I can watch people go through storage units till the cows come home.
That's such a good show. And then I found out, for some reason, finding out that one was like fake.
Oh, they're all fake.
But in my mind, I was like, this one's real.
This one is real.
Antiques Roadshow, and it's totally like chance. And they're definitely this is real. I can't believe it. Like,
I just I like people finding old cool shit. You know, that's where I. But so there's just so much good new content coming out that I always get a little anxiety when my DVR gets like 73-78%.
You're like, this is too
much. This is too much.
And that's kind of what makes me uncomfortable, because Netflix has been making all these deals recently. I think now they're up to 28 new shows or new seasons of things each year from now on.
See,
and that number's only going to build, so it's like,
and that
Lord.
To me is like a blanket. Like, all of these things that you guys are saying to me, I'm like, let me curl up alone in my room, not hang out with anyone except for occasionally my husband, most of the time alone with my cat, and let me watch 8 hours of Stranger Things.
I think it's totally, Stranger Things was great, and that's obviously
I thought it was
I
two episodes too long, but that's like a theory that I have that not everyone shares.
What was it, 10 episodes?
It was eight. I think that if they would have condensed it and made it six, it would have punched better, because I think the last two episodes were really languishing when they didn't need to be.
It's just interesting that now Netflix has really trained us I mean, you know, I used to, my diatribe was always that Ted Turner killed the mythos of the Saturday morning cartoon, mm-hmm. you know, because that was something that I used to look forward to as a child. It's like, sure. What's your favorite day? Well, it's cartoon day. But then Ted Turner came along and basically destroyed that with the...
Every day is cartoon day.
Yeah, I mean, all the time. I mean, we're living in an on-demand reality. But what, I mean, this whole idea of just shotgunning whole seasons, it's trained us differently. Like,
yeah.
People cannot watch... You know, like you can't, like waiting a week is like unheard of these days.
But I think that is interesting. And I think a lot of writers and TV critics are doing a lot of sort of exposition on this idea that now TV is being created more like movies.
Absolutely.
So like the writing is more like for features, you know, like it's more like things like True Detective, the first season,
yeah.
things like that, that are
which
more...
was, I mean, I think that is like a masterclass of television
filming
and storytelling. I mean,
super good.
From presentation to acting, to writing, to everything. I mean, I watched that and I literally held my breath. I think
that for
time.
Me, like the photography and then the art direction were the two that like,
flawless.
Obviously the acting, everything is great.
It was
but, like,
flawless.
Just being from the South, I was like, this is my life.
And then I got to be honest, because everybody was poo-pooing the second season, I didn't even give it a chance.
I actually didn't either. I haven't
seen
it either.
Here's something fun to do. If you haven't seen the second season, and you know, if you don't really have that big of an interest to go watch it, you take the first episode and you take the last episode, you watch them back to back.
And that's good.
I hear because of the way they bookended it, it almost runs just like a normal movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because then you can really tell... That first and that last episode are the ones that took the most precedence in the whole series.
Right.
Interesting.
Which is like, wow.
Now,
that's like the reading the first page and the
last
page of the
exactly.
book.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like obsessed with True Detective. Actually, Steven and I, my husband Steven, who I was dating.
Yeah, congratulations. I didn't even get a chance to say congratulato on the...
married
life.
Still
is
married.
It everything that you were hoping it would be?
You know, honestly... I just had like a
and more right
and
Virginia?
More. I just had a recent like career shift a bit to where I'm not working. We were like working like opposite days for like
mm-hmm.
4 months in a row, and then this whole week we had like 2 days off together because I'm back to a normal schedule. And I was like, oh my god, I love him so much. I was like, I forgot how awesome you are. Like, it's not that you don't know, but then it's like when you have the moment to actually like spend quality time with the person that you're like spending your life with, you're like, oh, you're so funny.
Yeah, there's a balance in everything. I mean, too much is too much. And then, you know, the opportunity to miss someone, I think,
yeah.
is something that we often forget about.
Sure. And take for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. It's too easy because there's people say like... You know, time is going so quickly these days. I mean, I don't know, getting older or whatnot, but I hear that it's because there's never time when we're not doing something. We're always on our phone, checking our Twitter, checking our Instagram,
busy.
Checking our Facebook. So,
catching Pokemon.
Yeah, oh man, I tell you, I'm
Level
all
19,
over that.
What up?
Yeah, I wanna be under every bed. Like no money. I'm addicted. I play all kinds of games.
What level are you?
I think I just hit 11 or 12.
Oh, that's good.
Now I'm kind of a wuss because I'm just catching them.
I'm not training them.
I haven't gone to a gym.
But see,
that's
fine. I think it should be like I am like such a Pokemon advocate at this point. Pokemon Go, I think, has done wonders for so many people that I know. But I'm not one of those people that's like, you gotta train, you gotta fight.
I don't know.
I'm like, I just want people to appreciate. And how they want to, if they want to take a stroll, just take a stroll. But actually, going back to your thing about the TV, I feel like I used to be such like, because I can be pretty intense, surprise. And I used to be so intense about being like, dude, you gotta watch Game of Thrones. There's only like 6 seasons, but you should just start now. And she's just, if you just, you'll be done by Sunday and just watch all.
Gotta
like
catch up.
Each, so
gotta
it's like,
catch
really,
up.
It's like 60 hours, right. But it's totally worth it, bro. It's like, I would just, you have a couple sick days of work, right? Like, I'd probably just like use like one or two of them. And then you'll be fine. You'll be done. And then you'll be caught up because it's like, it's not until April, which I know seems like a long time, but then you'll want to be caught up on the message boards and then you'll want to like read the book. And I would be like, so.
It's easy.
Weird about
it's easy to do. I mean, because there's so much.
Get excited. I think people get excited.
I mean, that's a great television show.
It is. Well, I think that's the one key that especially a lot of television nowadays is starting to hit. Let's get our audience familiar with our lore. Get them hooked really quick. Make sure that we have a strong mythos and this history behind us. I mean, look at Hannibal. Great television show. If you haven't seen it,
I haven't seen it. But
building on pre-existing
they
material,
they canceled it. So,
well, it ended technically.
Oh yeah, are they bringing it back on Hulu or no?
I don't know. There's a bunch of discussions about movies and stuff. But that's the cool thing about TV, though, is especially now with like American Gods.
But then you'd look at some. I don't mean to interrupt. But then you look at something like Lethal Weapon, and you know, I'm just like, what is Fox doing?
What like, Fox does best?
I guess
canceling another first season.
Yeah, I mean, it just to me, it's just like, come on, guys, there has to be. Like, at least Hannibal, you know, I mean, I feel like I haven't seen it, but that dude is super creepy, right?
Yeah, that one guy.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah. You know? I mean, your name's Mads. Yeah. Like, let's just throw it out there. You're already weird. Yeah. Like, a little bit. I feel that way about a lot of shows, though, and that's a good segue into how I know you.
Hey.
About a Gone Too Soon show. So, because we didn't actually introduce you before started talking about it. Justin Dre has joined us on the podcast today.
Thank you. Woo!
You will know as Starman from Still the King.
Yeah,
if you hear the sonorous tones of his voice and you recognize the deals that he makes, that's him.
Yeah, 23.7%.
Industry standard.
Yeah, there's the industry standard.
Dad, I'm trying to make a deal. I was so glad that you went with such an affected accent.
I'm really lucky because I am from the South.
Yeah, you're from Virginia, right?
From Richmond, Virginia. Shout out to the RVA.
Richmond, me.
Yeah, and that's how we were always good.
That
because
wasn't funny.
When Virginia and I worked together on Zach Stone, I'd always be like, oh, VA, Virginia, you know, so we had that connection immediately. But, you know, when I auditioned for Still the King, you know, it was just a blind audition. I didn't, you know, I just called in, and it was just such a fun little quirky part that just kind of came organically, and the tempo of the lines and stuff, I just had that fun with, and kind of found that little, you know, a little
shake,
just come on, woo, can it, Nashville and Billy Ray and all that stuff, so. It was great.
So, you mentioned the show. We met on Zach Stone is going to be
Zach
famous.
Zach Stone. I played Philip, the sound guy.
Really
lucked out there. Because my other two buddies, Jason and Arshad, they were the cameramen.
Yeah.
So they could only be in half the scenes.
And then
you
were in all the scenes.
So I got to be in all the episodes almost.
It was actually
pretty funny. Were like in five and
six. Yeah, because they did a thing where they were like, I think they were pretty cheap and they like would only book, you know, one of the, because obviously one person has to be holding the camera.
Right.
So
I mean, it was smart. I mean,
it was great. It was smart.
But
it
would
be a thing where it was like two of the three would really only be there because obviously someone is holding the camera.
Sure.
And for those who don't know, the premise of Zach Stone is going to be famous is that Justin's character, along with our friend Jason and Arshad, were this camera crew that followed around a character named Zach Stone.
Was hired by a recent high school graduate that I believe took his grandmother's
inheritance money.
You know, $2,300 that he got from graduating high school.
He booked you guys for like a month.
And decided that he was going to become famous.
He was like, bump college, I'm going to base. And it was cute. It was a very cute little episode.
It was
but
great.
It was basically like a little, you know, situational where every episode.
He had a new scheme.
Yeah, to become famous. It was like Zach Stone is going to be a pop
celebrity
star.
Yeah,
you know,
celebrity
Zach
chef.
Celebrity chef was really funny.
Goes missing.
He's going to get a makeover.
Right.
That was a great one.
That was great. It was so much fun.
It was honestly, and we were talking about it before we got on mic, it was such a funny, smart show that I think that it was almost like too smart for MTV.
Absolutely.
No offense, MTV.
No, I mean,
I know y'all smart with your Teen Wolf, but like, I think that it was like a
Shelley,
little too.
Shelley is our friend Shelley.
Shout out to
Shelley. Yeah.
She was actually so funny on that. She played the like hot girl,
the
but
femme
she
fatale.
Actually like she really was great with it. And
she was awesome.
I loved the writing on it. I thought was really smart. Shout out to one of our writers, Julia Brownell, who actually was one of the writers producers on Parenthood.
Okay.
She had a baby. She got married.
There
she
we
had
go.
A lot of things happening with her. Like obviously that was a while ago, but I remember she was pregnant during the show. But the writing was so funny, and one of my favorite things was that, like, every little, place that the characters would go to in the show, like the frozen yogurt place or, like, the club.
It's all the holes, right?
Everything had the word hole in it. So the club was the punk hole.
Yeah.
The frozen yogurt place was the fro hole.
The
tanning
hole.
Place was the bronze hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, the donut place was the donut hole. Is that what it's called?
I think or so. Something like
that. Sweet,
yeah.
No, Sweet Holes.
Oh, Sweet Holes
is what it was. Yeah. Because I remember specifically being copied on emails going back to S&P with like how much hole talk can like right. we get away with. Turns out a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually still have one of the little signs from the prop department that they all signed. That is like the bronze hole, like sun. It's like.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's so funny, but. I thought it was a great show.
It was a great show.
Funny. You guys were always cracking me up. You guys did a lot of physical comedy, which I thought was funny because, like, you had a decent amount of dialogue, but a lot of what you did was ended up being more physical.
Yeah, I think our presence there just really supported what he was trying mm-hmm. to do, and we were, you know, basically. I mean, we did have some dialogue, but I think that what was great was that they kind of let us evolve the characters a little bit yeah. too, and be more than just movable props, which. I think that initially we kind of were.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it was.
Yeah, it was kind of conceived that way, but then it became more yeah, when they saw, and, I think. Because you guys had a lot of but, really good chemistry.
And then what we were the closest one to Zach, too.
Right.
And so what was great about it was is that we would see what he was trying to do on camera, and then we were kind of his foils off camera when he was having doubt or, you know, he was right. getting upset and stuff like that. And we had some moments where we were actually there for him.
Yeah.
When, you know, so I was, you know. I thought it was great, and I wish that MTV had maybe threw a couple billboards out there, or maybe you know, put up a few more comerciales to get people to get some eyes on it. But Nature of the Bees, right?
Gone but not forgotten, though.
Yeah.
Amazon.com, you can actually find the whole first season. You can buy it on DVD. Like, I had to do that.
Can't
but
you? I mean, you can get it like it's on. Like if you're Prime, can't you just download the episodes?
Oh yeah,
too?
Maybe you can. Prime customers.
I think so.
This.
Hey,
Props
Prime.
Can.
I'm so good at Amazon Prime. I'm like,
do you watch
I'm,
Amazon TV?
No, I don't watch. I mean, that's the thing.
There's TV shows on Amazon now.
I can't believe. I don't even. Thing. But you should see me order. Like, I can get hair clips.
You just
I can
got
get
hair.
Like. I'm so no. I that's the problem. I told you. I was telling him earlier. I get a little anxiety. You know,
too many TV,
too much stuff. I get overwhelmed.
That's
you
fair.
Know. I watched. What am I watching right now? I'm watching Big Brother. And that's
but
got
you're, like,
me
choosing really weird.
That's
also
got me
not
three
things.
Nights a week, you know. So like, what else am I? What else is
Can
there?
Can I suggest you give up Big Brother
oh
and
my
replace
God.
It
you know,
with like
that,
a Game
that siren
of Thrones?
Is coming because
it's
you're
coming
watching
because
Big
of your.
Brother.
It's the bad TV.
I love Big Brother.
Are
you kidding me?
Physically coming
when I
for
started
you.
Dating my partner, now she when we started dating, she was like, "I have something to tell you," because she knew that I was an actor and.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, I have something that to confess. And I'm like, oh, you know, what? Nothing is going to, like, I'm an open, but it's all good, but, you know, whatever. And she's like, I watch Big Brother. And I'm like, you're what's wrong with America. You are what's wrong with
you're
my
like,
industry.
This isn't
and you are
fun.
Single-handedly destroying my dreams of being an actor and like working on good television and stuff. And I was like, I will never, ever watch that show. And I think it was the first episode. She's like, well, I'm going to watch it. Like, you don't have to. I'm like, I'm going to go upstairs. And I think she watched it. Like, and I would like go get like something in the refrigerator. I'm like, well, who's that guy? Okay, and what are they doing together? You know, and literally, I
just
think,
getting
I think, yeah, I mean, it was maybe 12 minutes into the first one that I,
like,
and that was, you know, 8 years ago now or something crazy.
Jesus. See, okay, so, we've
it's like a tar pit.
Problem.
It just caught
tell
you.
I tell you, it's like, I mean, this is great television, you know?
I'm just going to say, we've literally identified the problem.
No.
It's that you're taking your good TV time and you're watching
it's
Big
still
Brother
my time. I get to choose. I mean, one of my favorite
Listen,
episodes
I'm a
meninist,
that's fine, but.
Ricky Gervais is like one of my favorite actors.
Funny.
And the end of Extras, if you remember this episode, it was his Christmas special when he is on the celebrity Big Brother. And they're like, they ask him, he's like, will you come to my OK wedding, OK magazine?
Yeah.
And he has this monologue where he just skewers the whole kit and caboodle. And he's like, you know, will I come to your OK wedding? No, you know, I won't. And he, you know, he takes off his stuff and he leaves, you know, finds himself again. But I just remember watching that and just, and that was years before I actually watched Big Brother. I was like, oh my God, that was so great. I mean, seriously, people, if you're listening, go find the final monologue in that Extras
I'm so
Christmas
glad you
special.
Said that and weren't
it was,
to watch Big Brother.
I mean, I tell you, it, I mean, that television was so so great. And just to take it back, I mean, we're talking about new shows that are coming out, like Mr. Robot.
I haven't seen that one yet, but that's also.
How in the world did Mr. Robot, and no, I don't want to take a piss out of USA, but how did it make it to USA?
Because they took a chance on it. Yeah. You know why? Because they took a chance on
it. But I doubt that that was the first place that they pitched it
to. Of course not. But I think that that's what's happening with a lot of the networks now is because like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon are coming up. I think that's making networks reevaluate. And I think that's making them take chances on stuff.
They better or they're... It's going to die.
Dude, I hope so.
Can I use this brief moment just to say GMG TV is actually going to be starting a new series where they go over episodes of TV shows, and Mr. Robot was their choice. So they're doing the first season, and I think that's going to be airing sometime next month.
That's his podcast, Grand MacGuffin TV.
Grand MacGuffin, guys. Everybody.
So what? Tell everybody that's not listening or doesn't know that is listening now about GMG TV.
Yeah, so Grand MacGuffin is our... our mother network that kind of has just a whole bunch of little shows. And this new one coming out is GMG TV. So every season they'll be choosing a new season of a new old something that's around that's popular TV that hasn't been looked into too much. And not too many people know about Mr. Robot just yet. Second season just premiered. Yeah. And we just watched the second episode last week. It's getting back. It's like Fight Club. Like, I didn't realize that it was like, oh shit, it's hacking the Fight Club world.
I only watched like one scene from like the pilot and I was pretty sucked in. Yeah. But I admittedly don't have that channel.
Yeah.
And or regular television or TiVo. So I just have to watch it on the Xbox.
Well, you're probably better off to be honest with you because there's so much. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to hate on Time Warner.
I was going to say, I also should rescind.
Well, let's hate on Time Warner.
Yeah, okay, so what's this new Time Warner? Okay, so Time Warner is merging with someone else.
Yeah, fuck, and they're it's going to be
Spectrum. Oh, I'm like, God. What brain trust came up with the bad guy from James Bond? Let's call our global conglomerate, you know, media corporation, internet, TV, phone company, Spectrum. I mean, like, it sounds like the evil empire, right?
I was going to say Oracle. Condom.
Yeah.
Spectrum. Time Warner.
Rib for her pleasure.
Your family planning needs.
Just like you won't feel a thing.
Comes right after politically incorrect.
Yeah, it's like you only feel when they bend you over. You know, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know.
This podcast has gotten off the rails.
Yeah, you know.
Pull it a little bit.
Right. Let's find our way again.
So the reason we're here is because of you today, Justin. That's put a lot of pressure on you, but the survival of this episode of the podcast
is really
on you.
Perfect.
So.
No pressure.
No, I love it. I thrive in high stakes. So. Let me take everyone to the Spectrum.
So I was IMDb-ing you.
Oh, good.
Recently.
Thank God.
So you've been
somebody was
for,
trying to get that
build that star
meter. Yeah, trying to get that star meter. Come on, star meter. I don't know. You see people putting those things out there all the time. It's like, click on my IMDb page. That's the next thing. I really want that like petri dish thing that you can just spit into like next to your computer, and that'll be like our.
It'll just be like, welcome, Justin.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome, Justin.
So you've been acting since 2009? Since before that?
Well, I have been. I've been acting since about the seventh grade.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's back it up then to the seventh grade. Were you in Richmond, Virginia?
Yeah, I was in Richmond, Virginia, and I never played sports in my life, but as a young child, I would always look like I went to the same high school for 12 years with the same people.
Like a small, privileged
high school. it was great. But at an early age, we would do plays every at the end of like the spring, you'd have the play, and I remember always looking forward to it, and then I remember like getting really bummed when I didn't get the role of the monkey in Dr. Doolittle, and you'd only do one scene.
It's a good role.
It was a great role. And I was super bummed. I was like, I thought I deserved it. And I remember like moping around the library, and like. that feeling in your heart. You're like, where's this coming from, you know? But it ended up that I did get that. So that was great. And then I won the music award graduating from lower school to middle school. And then I never I never sang or did anything ever again. I don't know why. I guess I was active in the choir and stuff as a young child, but then I just didn't want to do it. So my sixth and seventh grade year, I tried to like play some sports and I tried to play tennis. And then at the spring of my seventh grade year, I had one of my best friends pass away. He was a little, you know, we were what, 13 years old.
Yeah.
And he had moved from South Carolina, and his name was Jamie Van Dorsten, and he had heart problems or something. And I just remember getting this call from my friend John Morgan, and he told me that our friend had died. And it was just such a weird thing at such a young age to have somebody that, like, you know, you deal with death and, like, you know, your grandparents die or an uncle or something like that, but to have somebody that was like your best friend or one of your best friends pass away, it really threw me for a loop. And I think that I found the theater. Like after that happened, I got into this play, and it was cheaper by the dozen. And then from eighth grade on, I did theater my whole high school career.
Wow.
So, and we had a trimester thing. So I got to do 3 shows a year. For 4 years, and I knew at that point that I wanted to go to school for theater. I wanted to be an actor. And so I went to East Carolina. Cool. In Greenville, because they have a Meisner, you know. I wanted to be a method man, you know, whatever that means, you know. We'll get into that. But
a rapper, you wanted to be a rapper.
I basically, and this was before Wu-Tang, so it's, you know, it's predestined.
It's before Garden State even, I understand.
METHOD. And so I was in Greenville, North Carolina. And unfortunately, as a young kid, I made some not so great choices at the time. And I was asked to leave East Carolina. And that'll be another podcast.
Too deep.
So I went back to Richmond. And then I was looking for a place to go. And I, because I wasn't in school, I ended up at the National Theater Institute in Connecticut, right there on the Sound.
I've heard of that state before.
Yeah, yeah. And so, because I didn't have any place to go. Usually, it's like a semester abroad for juniors. You know, if you do a junior semester abroad. But I wasn't going back to college, so I ended up going there twice.
Hmm.
And then I got into CalArts after that, and I came out to California and I went to CalArts for just about a month, and then went back home yet again with my tail between my legs. Because,
excellent.
You know, I don't know, you know, in life, the decisions that you make, you know, as a young person, I feel like, are often clouded by, you know, your vision of yourself, or, you know, fear. Or at the time, I thought I was being very romantic, and I thought I was in love with this young girl. And so I made that decision at that time, and then I went back to Richmond, my hometown, and joined VCU, the college in Richmond, Virginia Commonwealth University. And it was there that, because of all my other education or all the other credits that I had accrued, I was doing performance, but I was also making films.
Hmm.
So I was getting, you know, those were my electives.
Cool.
So I was getting all credits for that. So basically I stayed in Richmond from about, I think it was like 97, 98 till 2008. And I was a professional actor there. I got my Equity card, which is the theater union.
Yeah.
And when films would come through, I would be Taft Hartlead. And I did a slew of local commercials. And I got married, and I ran a nonprofit theater and film production company called Yellow House. And we produced new works of theater, and we produced new works of film. And this was back in the day when it was like Final Cut 1, and we were shooting on DV and SD, and, you know, just making, I mean, we were making shorts that we would then put on VHS and put at our local video store for free rental. This is way, but there's no YouTube. There's no, you know, none of this stuff. I remember my friend around that time, he was like, dude, you got to check out this new thing. It's called Friendster. And I'm like, whatever, dude. You know, like, you know, I remember
internet thing's not even going to last.
Yeah, like, you know, we were listening to those, like, G.I. Joe PSAs, oh, yeah, you know, from Bob's World, like, Mr. Bottom Massage Machico.
Like, salad fingers.
Oh, man. Stuff. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. So that was, like, around that time. And then we actually, I directed a feature length corporate samurai film that came out. Probably,
can I ask,
like,
corporate samurai?
Yeah, it was a corporate samurai. Well, like, this was the pitch. And we shot it all on, like, SD. And we took ourselves way too seriously.
I'm taking this seriously,
Hitiro the Peasant. You know, there's not a lot. It's not a big digital footprint out there of it. If you can find a copy of it.
Is it on
never
Hitiro?
Show it
Is
to
it
me.
On the YouTube?
Hitiro. It's not. I actually did just put the trailer up on my Vimeo page.
Oh my god, I'm linking it in the episode.
It's, yeah, it's something else. And I think, unfortunately, that part and parcel ended my marriage.
The trailer?
Well, not the trailer, the movie. You know, you work, and that was my first experience, and like a really humbling experience, because I had the ego at the time to say, oh, I can direct this movie, a corporate samurai film where it's going to kind of be a little like, I want to do like a live action, like, you know, Princess Mononoke,
right.
You know, manga
with
flavor.
Power ties.
Yeah, you know, I really like that, and swords and guns and this and that. And then it took me 3 years, and basically I got way in over my head, and I was like, man, know what the heck I'm doing, and finally came together of something, and it was a really great learning experience, I think. And then we continued to do theater, and I continued to do theater. But then once my marriage fell apart, I had some friends that I had met at VCU that had moved from New York to Los Angeles and said, you know, if you want to be an actor, you need to come out here. You need to, you know, you can stay in Richmond. And I mean, Richmond was great. In Richmond, I worked at some great theaters, the Firehouse Theater, and the Barksdale Theater, and it was very supportive of its own. And so I had the opportunity to play roles that you'd never, never get if I was in a bigger, you know, community.
What was your favorite role from your time there?
I think the last role, I think it was called The Late Henry Moss. I think that's what it was, but it was a very good role for me because dealing with the end of my marriage, and I think I was drinking a lot, and I was, you know, back out dating, and just, but to be able to have an outlet once again, I think that we crave these things, you know. I don't know about you guys, but I'm constantly trying to create, you know. That's the way I deal with like life, or, you know, when I drive on the highway and I try to get, you know, if your red level goes up too high, instead of blowing up at somebody, I like, you know, like write something or try to like,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
So,
it's that Judd Apatow quote, kind of. I don't know if you heard it was his, I think it was his episode of, Marc Maron, or You Made It Weird, but I think it was Marc Maron. And he basically speaks to the point that a lot of like his friends and family will sort of ask, like, why he's like always busy, like why he's like always busy.
Oh yeah.
And what he touches on is the feeling of needing to constantly be making things to feel more calm. Like there's an anxiety obviously of the making the thing because you want that thing to be good, but the anxiety of that is so much less than the anxiety of not doing the creating.
Right. I mean,
that it's like you have to go with the less.
I'd always rather be busy than be bored.
Exactly.
Like, it's just,
I feel like that iteration broken down just a little bit more is like the Incredible Hulk. Like, it's not that I'm not angry. It's just that I'm dealing with being angry.
Right,
you know?
Right.
That's my secret,
that I'm always angry.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's like right on the head. And I also think, to a certain extent, creating in any process, filmmaking, painting, writing, reading, you know, whatever the case, I think that it's not just the fact that it's outputting creativity, it's catharsisism.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
it's that release, like you said, hitting that red level.
Right.
That's the release and kind of the calm of everything. Because you can be writing the most stressful, dramatic scene in the world. You can be acting in the most dramatic scene, but you're still having a blast with you know?
Yeah. Well, that's literally what I was able to do. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, that's why I was kind of tongue in cheeking that, like, the method stuff too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I've been to so many different acting classes with so many different teachers that say, this is how you act. I'm like, oh, man. And what I've learned is that when you have 40 different people telling you that this is how you do it, you know, you learn that there's no right or wrong way. But I was really lucky to have this experience at that time to be like a super raw emotional performance. And that was my final performance in Richmond. And so I was always grateful for that, you know, that there, I left a little part of me there.
Do you ever go back and visit?
You know, I do. My family, I'm good. Lucky enough to, my parents still live there. And my sister and her husband and my niece and nephew.
How long were you married?
We were together for 7 years. We were only married for about 2.5. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but we Yellow House was our production company, and it was great. We had, you know, a ton of friends that we were all get together. And it was like a non-profit, you know, so nobody was really making a ton of money, but we were at least, you know, keeping active and, you know, outreach to the community and doing fun stuff all the time.
At the end of the day, like, nobody gets into this industry for the paycheck. Like, ideally, there will be a paycheck that eventually will make you
Yeah, but that's that 10-year overnight success thing.
Exactly.
You know, that, I mean, so I moved here in 2008, and so when I on my IMDb, I say professionally since about 2007, 2008, because that's when I was able to join SAG when I got
here.
Okay,
that's awesome. And what was the thing that got you SAG?
You know, I was already Taft Hart lead in Virginia a couple times. I was like on Gods and Generals. I played, you know, I'm a soldier in the 4th Virginia. It's great. I played, you know, and me and my buddy in Virginia, we have a documentary called Day Player about us, like, driving to D.C. and, like, it's...
Check the link. It'll be there, guys.
Oh, yeah, it'll be great. I'm trying to get that stuff up. But, you know, that was the kind of stuff we did. So I did that. Then I did, like, Lake City with Troy Garrity and Rebecca Romaine and Sissy Spacek.
Cool. How was working with Sissy?
You know, I actually didn't have a scene with her, but I had a scene with Troy and Rebecca. And they were great. I mean, you know, it's like in Cots and Generals, like Robert Duvall in it, but I didn't have a chance to work with him. I mean, I was so green on that movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was this big scene with Stephen Lang, who was great. And he's just like, just calm down, son. You got this. You know, he was great because I'm like, holy shit, you know, what's going on? And before that, I'd worked on this.
Did you calm down after that?
You know,
was
I don't
his
know.
Voice,
I mean,
like, enough.
He definitely,
to calm you
know, he's like, all right, son, you got this. You know,
you can do this. I believe
General
you.
Jackson, sir, father. I'm a soldier in the 4th Virginia. But yeah, and then I was really lucky to – I worked in – Virginia is right next to Petersburg, and Petersburg is where Tim and Dabney Reed, they tried to create a studio back there in Petersburg, New Millennium Studios. And this is – geez, this is years and years ago now. I mean, it must have been 97. Right when I went back to Richmond. But I got cast in this movie called Asunder. It was one of the first movies that they produced. And I had this great little scene with, who is the guy he was on? Law and Order. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
Sam Waterston. Jimmy Smits.
No, the other guy.
Vincent D'Onofrio?
No, I wish.
Hang on, I'm looking it up. Blair Underwood.
Blair Underwood, thank you, jeez.
I've worked with Blair once before.
Okay,
he's a great guy.
Man, he was always like, yeah, man, you'll be out here again. You'll do it again.
God, yeah. That's exactly what he sounds like.
So I worked in The Contender. There was a movie, the Christian Slater, Joan Allen movie, where she was the vice president.
And
it was a great movie with Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges got an Academy Award nomination for that film. I was in that. So I was really lucky in Richmond that and we were always fighting very tooth and nail for incentives in Richmond, very active in the Virginia Production Alliance that was, you know, almost I guess you could call them a lobbying group to lobby the...
You go to the Capitol and
say... Yeah, you know, hand out popcorn and say movie industry is good for everybody.
Jobs.
Jobs. And stuff. So, but I was very lucky and very grateful for all the opportunities I had in Richmond, but I was Taft Hart lead a bunch. So when I came out here, Virginia's a right-to-work state, so I didn't have to join the union. And really, there's no reason to in Richmond. But out here, I mean, I think that there is a big... I mean, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like if you're not in the union, nobody
like,
really, you know, you're not.
Yeah, you like kind of got
to
be.
I mean, I'm
it's
not
like
trying to be a
club.
Dish, but it's, you know, you're not really, you're not a professional if you're not in the union.
They love putting that eligible, though.
I'm not trying to poo-poo anybody, and I'm sure people are doing great work,
sure.
But I'm just saying
I don't think anybody's shaking their fist right now.
Yeah, I know. How could
this?
You? But, you know, if you want to have an agent and a manager and stuff that takes you seriously, I mean, I was really lucky that I had somebody right when I moved out here said, you know, I've got this manager guy that I'm more than happy to introduce you to. And his name was Jack Silver. He was great. He's like,
old Jack Silver.
Jack Silver. He's
old
like,
Hollywood.
He was great.
Sure.
He was great. Jack Silver. He was great.
I feel like you should wear a
him and his
hat.
Son, Mike Silver, Michael Silver, who still is working out there today. You know, and
please,
he said,
call me Mike.
He said, you know, I'll take you on. You know, aww. You look, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. You know, just take me on. And he's like, well, let's get you some co-stars. I'm like, dude, let's do it. And I think within the first 2 years, I had like 7 or 8 co-stars.
Wow.
And then, so, I mean, just, you know, I was like, I mean, I remember the first thing I booked was on a short-lived show, it was a network show called The 11th Hour.
Okay.
And I was, you know, orderly. And I think my line was, I'm sorry, but you can't. And it was C-A dash. And I was like, you know, I went in and just, I'm sorry, but you can't. Like, in, you know, for them to interrupt and stuff. And they were like,
that's 4.5 words, though.
In the casting office, they were like, is that it? I'm like, yeah, that's it. They're like, okay. But I remember booking that and being so, you know, it's just so funny as an actor. You're like, and I remember when I booked that first movie, The Asunder Role.
Yeah.
Tim Reed was auditioning me. And I was, you know, I think I was 18 or 19. And I'm like, oh, man, if I get this role, if I get this role, sky's the limit, you know. And ever since then, it's been a cruel learning experience, you know, to have, you know, to think that you know, the idea that work begets work, I think that idea rings true more than it has,
yeah,
you know, in practice. But you know, you don't stop, you know.
I was gonna say, I think it's also being open to it, because I always hate paraphrasing people, but isn't it Bryan Cranston who is the one that has like the good quote about like, I'm like ready to work, because right. like I just like work.
Availability.
He's like such like a working actor, because yeah. he enjoys, and even with all the acclaim that has come, like, he still remains present in that. And I think that that's such like a great attitude to have, because then again yeah. that again puts you as a part of that group as a whole that is coming together to make the thing, instead of trying to separate yourself.
Yeah, I mean, if you think that's once, absolutely, if you think you're better than the process, then yeah. fuck off.
Well, because it
know?
Should be about the process,
no,
you know. That's
you
that's why
to
we
be,
do it.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I consider one of my biggest strengths my availability.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. I'm available to work with you. I'm available.
You came to be on my podcast.
You know, but yeah. I'm just saying, it's like, I tell people say, well, how do you break into the industry? And I'm like, you need to be nice to everybody, because the person, and this is what I tell friends, it's like, you could bum a cigarette from somebody and get a job just as likely as, and
yeah,
people don't do this anymore, but when I moved out here, it was seminar, 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 seminar. And I know lately there's been a big kibosh on these casting director seminars and stuff after one of the big casting directors
what
got.
What TV show was it? He was like Law and Order. No, he was.
We just got Law and Order on the brain, guys.
It is a show like that.
Yeah.
It was a casting director.
Oh, okay. David Scott, I believe it was.
Right.
David Scott.
He got paid up for taking bribes to get people on the list.
I mean,
or
I think that it's
that
really
event.
You know, there's a crackdown on it's this pay to play mentality right. that I think a lot of this town runs on. And I'm not saying
yeah.
that exposure to casting directors and exposing to you know, agents, because you got to get in front of them somehow. I mean, right. you know, but if you're paying $35 and they can't even take your headshot and resume to maybe put you on file, and then you continue to do that, it's not fair. And you have no credits.
Right. Well, a lot of writing workshops are like that too. There's like yeah. a lot of these like screenplay competitions where people will come and it'll be like industry insiders will
yeah.
read your or whatever. And it's like, some of them are legit, obviously, but then there are also some that are just like kind of bullshit, and you're going to waste like $100 or whatever to have somebody like
yeah.
tell you that you're going to write like the next great fucking indie feature
or
something.
I think this town, I mean, this town is definitely built on people who want that.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have that money and you think that it's going to get, you know,
yeah,
going to get you. And it's a bummer, like, you know, because I think a lot of people, there's a lot of dust that clogs the filter out here. And there's
yeah.
this whole industry that's built up around basically sucking those people dry.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to be
well, yeah,
because
it's also that thing of like, no one's going to tell you to stop if you need to stop. Because like nobody, like people, I think, care about what you're doing, but a lot of the industry, like the machine, like
oh yeah,
it doesn't really stop if you do.
I
do you
took
know what I mean?
Acting classes back in the day from somebody that had people in the class that clearly should not have been in the class.
Yeah.
And instead of being a teacher and saying, look, maybe this isn't the right thing for you,
they
and like
kept
focused. They would much rather have kept the people in there. And kept
no, of course, because like at the, but you know what's funny is like being here for so long. Like part of me also doesn't begrudge that acting teacher because I'm like, well, he's they're playing the game too. Yeah, like I get it. Like, and if that person,
but if it's a casting director, right, that is
that's
like
different.
Because I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, going into castings and trying to get on these people's radars and stuff like that. I mean, it's difficult, you know. It's this whole industry set up to kind of like, you know, suck people dry is kind of, you know, it's a real bummer.
What were your first jobs when you, did you start acting like right away?
Well, I mean, or? When I got here, I worked at Ralph's. I got a job at Ralph's. And I basically worked at Ralph's for almost 3 years. I was, you know, they were great. You know,
Were you part of the union?
Yeah, you have to join the union. You have to join the food workers union.
You were part of two unions at the same time?
Oh, yeah. I'm
double jeopardy.
Yeah, I know, right? But I worked at this Ralph's, and it was super frustrating because of the way the union was working. And there are a lot of people there that, I don't know. I mean, my attitude is when you're paid to work, you show up and you work. And there were a lot of people that were there that were paid to work and would show up and fart around. And, like, not get stuff done.
How dare you say fart?
But that industry is based on the people before you that have shifts doing a little bit of work. So at the end of the night or the next morning, there's not a shit ton of work for those guys. Right. And unfortunately, because that industry is so sue heavy and this and that, there is no, like, you get a slap on the wrist if you don't do your work or nothing. So that's there's no incentive to really do it. And, you know, at some points, I remember I was working there and I was getting like $8.30 an hour. I wasn't making anything. But because of the way that the unions are set up and the contracts, like, there were people there that were making like $35 an hour doing almost the exact same thing that I was doing. And it was just, it was like taking a step back and kind of looking at it and going like, this is so screwed up, you know? And then the reality is it was a very difficult job because if people have a bad day and then they're coming in after work and we don't have their frozen peas,
they're like pissed.
They take it out on you.
Yeah.
They take that shit out on you. They beat you up and like they're mean to the cashiers and they're mean to the baggers and just rude people. And it got so bad one night that I was working as a cashier, and I wasn't being paid as a cashier, but we, you know, they needed me on the line, and because I'd been there long enough, I knew what I was doing. And somebody got mad at me. He's like, "Oh, you're out of the frozen peas," and I'm like, "Dude, I'm a bag boy moonlighting as a cashier at 11 o'clock at night on a Tuesday, and you're gonna yell at me about the frozen peas?" And I'm like, "Nope, I'm not gonna do it." And I walked out.
Whoa, I walked out. That's so legit.
I said, I was like, nope, that's it. And I walked out of there. And then I think a couple months later, I booked Zach Stone. And
I remember you literally, like, because when I met you, I remember you being like, oh, yeah, like the last job that I had was like Ralph's.
Yeah, I was working at Ralph's.
What? And you were like, yeah, no, that was like my last. And I was like, immediately, I was like, I feel like I'm new friends with this guy.
I mean, I didn't. Well, they were so great to me because they knew that I was legit. Like, I wasn't like, you know, I was older than everybody else there. I showed up on time. I did my work. I went above and beyond basically for no money. And the way that industry worked is like you couldn't get a raise unless you wanted to go into the grocery store. It's like, well, we're not going to give you a raise because we know that you're not trying to be like a Kroger, Ralph's. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you want a store? Yeah, we'll give you a raise and we'll give you more. I'm like, I just want a raise. I don't want any more responsibility. Yeah. You know, I've been here for so long. But they were great because I would call and I'd say, look, I just got an audition. And they'd say, baby, go do your thing. You know, and so I, you know, as much the people that I worked for, corporate was one thing, but the people that I worked for at my store were always awesome and were super supportive. And they were always, oh, honey, you're going to do your thing. We're so proud of you. And I booked these little jobs and they'd be like, when are you going to be on TV again? And so it was, I mean, as much, you know, baloney as I want to throw at it, it was actually very comforting to have somebody that I felt supported what I was trying to do at the time, you know? And so, and you know, I really have no restaurant experience and stuff like that. So, so that's why I went into the, I went to work at Ralph's. And
well, then it also worked to your strengths too, because it went back to your career of being available and being able to have that sort of freedom
and talk to people all the time. Yeah. I mean, really, I mean, it was just like, I mean, I was a bag boy, you know, courtesy clerk, they call it. And so you're just sitting there talking to people all day. How you doing? How's your day? And, you know, navigating the ups and downs of people's. And some of the stuff I saw there, I mean, it's so sad, you know, like some of these poor people. I mean, not like poor financially, but like
just miserable bastards.
Yeah. Man. You know, people that you could tell had been out, you know, partying all night that were probably 65 and, you know, had shit running down their leg. I mean, it's just like, and you're just like, you just see everybody. And in LA, you know, you've got the person with the Tesla right next to the guy that's like
sleeping on the ground next to the Tesla. Yeah, it
has, you know, the old Chrysler mom minivan from 1983 that is packed to the gills with, like, you know, newspaper and, you know, it's like the hoarder and everybody in the dream, because, like, you know, the grocery store is the grand equalizer, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, then it was. I mean, now you just, I guess you call Google Express or this or
Amazon
that.
And drops food.
Yeah, they just, you know, it's like, oh, magic. It's like my Amazon Prime thing. Yeah. It's like, I'm so good at it. Yeah.
But you know, the podcast, Super Hungry Conversations Super with Hungry. Not So Starving Artists.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, it's this perspective on what it is to be a working artist. Obviously, we've touched on that a lot, just in the, like, conversation we had. But if you had to have, like, one sort of bit of advice for maybe somebody who is, say, working as an equity actor in their hometown theater and dreaming of maybe coming out to do it, like, if you had to give advice to somebody, what would it be?
What I always say to people is, like, if you want to come to L.A. and you want to try, you get here, go do it, because you can't start here until you get here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the nature of the beast. Like, my experience is people really don't give a care what you did before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know people that are talented, people that were in New York and working, and they've come out here, and people just, unless you have some recognizable credits, that working in LA and doing the whole gag out here,
mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem, or at least in my experience, doesn't seem to get you very, very far. So, like, if you want to come out here, get out here, do it, because you can't start here until you get here. And it's really about, you know, being, like we talked about, being available.
Yeah.
And don't close off to anything. Do not do that, because you never know where you're going to get some insight into your act. I mean, that's, as an actor, it's like, don't be afraid to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying go out and do heroin and, you know, have unprotected, you know, it's like, you know, I don't,
wrap
I don't,
it up.
I don't prescribe to that, you know, that you have to kill somebody to play a murderer, but, like, don't be afraid to, like, you know, get your heart broken, or don't be afraid to, you know, laugh at somebody's farts or something like that, because, I mean, that's what makes you get in touch. You know, don't be afraid to feel, don't hide your feelings. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's just as an actor. Like, everything in L.A. is an acting metaphor. Like, when I get to, like, we're talking about the Red Line, like, I'll go to Costco and, like, walk around Costco, because, like, it's, like, in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
Like, people are, like, nuts in Costco. But if you can find your zen there, it's like you're like, then take that into an audition where, like, the audition's, like, the most stressful time, because you're, like, putting yourself on the line and this casting director's like, thank you. He's like, do you want to see it again? You want to give me a, no, thank you. So I just drove 90 minutes to come on for 2 minutes. But, and then the biggest key is, like, you know, and I think that this goes for anybody, is that, especially in this town, the struggle is to find self-validation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's tough. I mean, that is a tough thing, and it's something that, you know, I struggle with all the time, because we're so, whether it's, you know, a good job from the director or the validation of booking the job or whatever, or even being on the TV show or something like that. I mean, we're constantly looking for other people, or at least I am, you know, constantly searching out that validation from other people. And so if you can get to a point where you are validating yourself and you don't necessarily, it's not that you don't care, but it's not, if somebody doesn't agree with you or doesn't give you that validation, it doesn't crush you
right.
and cause you not to then try next time again.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's what I struggle with, and that's what I try to work on, and just, you know, say, you know, I mean, it's like, it's a Travis Smiley, I'm, you know, I'm good enough, and people like me and stuff, but, you know,
yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, you have to be able to do that, and this is not a, this is a tough town, because it will, I mean, it will, as an actor, you get, you know, I mean, 99% of it is no.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to say, well, it has so little to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other things that are working against me, and being able to release that and not take that on,
yeah,
I mean, that is a tool that will only elevate you to the next level if you can. And it's hard to do. Like, I don't fucking, you know, I'm yeah. no Jedi at that ship, but you know what I mean? These aren't the droids you're looking for. But if you can acknowledge, I mean, I think that that's the key. If you can acknowledge this stuff and at least be aware of it and attempt to practice that kind of stuff in this town that wants to do nothing but make you second guess yourself and make you feel bad about yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the worst thing you can do as an actor is second guess your instincts or your choices. So, you know, try to be available and try to be true and try to find validation in yourself. That's what I would tell people. And shoot, if you want to come out here, get out here, because this town does love. I mean, it loves new people, and it loves, you know. And if you're creative now, I mean, now more than ever, if you have a good idea, and you've got, I mean, everybody and their brother's got a camera.
Yeah.
If you've got something that's like a kernel of something that's beautiful or good or a story that needs to be told, that you can shoot it, and you don't need anybody else. Like,
yeah.
You can get a fucking million hits. You can get stuff shown, you know, all over the world. And so, like, all these things coming together, you know. And so the reality is like, you know, I kind of like the who are the brothers, the Duplass brothers.
Brothers,
you know, they're just kind of like, there's no excuse for you not to be making stuff.
Yeah, that
you know,
at
there's no, just don't, like, don't give yourself any excuse not.
I
you know,
good.
And if you don't have to be in LA. I mean, like,
right.
If you want to be an actor and you want to do stuff like that, like, I think that it's important that you at least. You don't have to do it here, but you need to gain the perspective from being in this town
yeah.
and understanding what it means to be a professional actor. Because being a professional actor has almost nothing to do with how talented you are and acting.
Right.
Being a professional actor has to do with this, like, arduous process of navigating people trying to get you into offices that you might have 3 minutes in. You know, and now, like, the big thing is the self-tape. You know, everybody self-tape,
right.
Self-submit, self-tape. And so then you spend all this time not only – and I do my own self-tapes because that's a whole nother industry. You wouldn't spend $40 to $60 to, like, for an audition.
Right.
So I do it, and I always try to do a little bit more above and beyond because I want it to stick out, you know, stand out. But it's difficult because you're then just going on your instincts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no casting director to say, well, can you maybe switch it up, maybe give you a little note. I mean, I love a director that meets you and
mm-hmm.
says, okay, that was great. How about this? How about, you know, I want that. I want somebody to meet me there with what we're doing because I try to come in as prepared as possible. I mean, I'm not
yeah.
wasting anybody's time.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about. I mean, you want the crew to like you. Because you are getting them to lunch 10 minutes earlier because
right.
you came in super prepared. You're professional as fuck.
You got your shit done.
You got your shit done. You're not wasting anybody's
One
time. And you're
Justin
polite.
In and out.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, in theory. But, you know, but the reality is it's like you're not the one that's fucking stuff
right.
up.
That's really, I think, everyone on set has one goal in common, and it's like, please don't let me be the one
but
to
then
fuck it up.
But then you're with people that are fucking it up and blaming other people because they're insecure about themselves, and then it comes back to what we were talking about earlier. You see these people that are acting a fool on set, taking it out, and that's just, you know, because they don't want anybody to look at them fucking it
right.
up, so they're gonna blame somebody else or put somebody else down. It's like, what? We should be so lucky. I mean, just, we should be so lucky that we're lucky enough to work in this industry. I just did a little thing. It's like, It was a Nickelodeon show, and the dad, he was so great. He's worked with all these kids, and he would like get everybody together and be like, "This is, you know, this is the best job in the world. This is not, this is a privilege, not a right." You know, to these kids that have, I mean, like I've done some children's show before, and a lot of these kids, you know, God love them, but when you're in that environment,
and that's all you know, and you're like, you grow up in it.
It's certainly tough. I mean, you got about 3 years before the you know, puberty takes on and stuff, and it's tough. But recognizing that, you know, this is such a privilege to be a part of this industry, and you know, just attitude of gratitude, man. You know, goes a long way.
What is your most memorable favorite title you were accredited as?
Like character name?
Yeah, character name, or even just generic. I remember you had mentioned
hashtag
you are orderly.
Oh, yeah. I think that, so I did, it's a couple of years, this is years ago. This is a kind of funny story. We do have a minute, or we
yeah.
can?
No,
come, okay.
Oh, we're good. I just didn't want
no,
you.
No, I love, no, guys, I can talk
got,
all night, man. I'm so good.
3 hour
I love talking about me. Are you kidding me? So I, this is a great one. So I remember it was right before Christmas, and I get this audition, and my manager's like, "Well, you don't have to go." And I'm like, "What is it?" And he's like, "Well, it's for The Bold and the Beautiful." And
you were like, "I'm going."
I'm like, "Okay, I'm liking this." And he's like, "It's like for Santa's elf." And I am like, "Dude, I've got this," because in college, at VCU,
you?
I played an elf at Christmas time with the legendary Santa.
The
Santa. We had like Millen and Rhodes and Tallheimer's, which are all like old, you know, department stores, which do not exist anymore.
Sure.
Amazon, you know. But I would
four men.
Yeah, I would
four
go.
Cosmans.
I would go. I was Santa's elf, and you know, take pictures of the kids. It was that thing, like, hey, look up, you know, look over here, and then you press the button and you give them, you know, sit next to Santa. It was great. We had the Snow Queen down. I mean, it was super high tech. So we had the Snow Queen down at the end, and the Snow Queen would be like, "Oh, and what's your name?" And she'd be like, "Oh, Danny and Angela." And then Santa'd be like, "Danny, Angela, come on over and see me." And the kids, it would just,
they'd,
you know, melt
out
your heart, you know, because, you know, she had a little microphone. And I mean, no, Santa is real, kids. Don't take this wrong. But this guy was obviously.
I love that you think that children are listening to this podcast.
You never know.
They've got their iPhones.
You know,
they've got the podcast.
I tell you,
app.
Man. You know, if we are young,
you just spoiler alerted children's
right?
dreams.
Anyhow, so I said to my manager, I was like, "Dude, I got this." And so I went in, and I was just like, "Hey, what's going on, Danny?" You know, like it was the funniest thing. So I booked the gig, and I'm like, and I go in there, and I. The thing about soaps is they're so into their own thing. You know, it's a
because it's like every day they like shoot every day,
and they just do not give an F. Like it just does. Like they're like, "Do we get it? Nope. Okay, moving on." You know, like they don't care. You know, it's just like
they're like, "We're on schedule."
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter. Okay. Nothing matters because nobody's watching it anymore. Like
that's
like
so funny.
I go in and I'm like, "Hey, what's going on?" You know, "Hey, you know, like Santa's elf." And it was this funny scene where it's like the bro hires his friend to come in as Santa's elf. And then, like, after the kid goes to bed, he's like, "You really owe me one, Maroney," or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I'm there. And they put, like, this big old beard on me and, like, a wig and, like, glasses. And I'm like, "What the heck is going on?" And so there was this whole thing. Like, the elf came in and gave the kid the present, and then I say goodbye to the bro, and I'm like, "Where do you want me to leave the elf uniform that like somehow I had borrowed from him or something?" "Oh, leave that. I'll just change. Oh, you owe me one, brother." Yeah, you know. And then like the evil stepmom or whatever like changes into the elf uniform and then like hoodwinks the girl. And I'm not trying to put this bee on blast, but it was Kevin's mom from the friggin' Wonder Years, right? Okay? So, like, she's playing the evil stepmom. And so she's like, we're doing the rehearsal. And I have, like, no idea what the F is going on. I'm like, they're like, okay, you come over here and play with the kid. And then I'm like, okay, are we shoot? Like, there's no communication right at that time. Because the bros that are, like, doing it, like, they don't want to be there. They're, like rolling their eyes at the, you know.
Yeah.
So we do, like, a rehearsal. And she goes, like, oh, no, you got to do the elf voice after, like, even after the kid goes to bed. Because I'm going to do the elf voice later, and they can't know that I'm not you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever, crazy ass lady. You know, I'm not going to be like, hey, Danny, what's going on? And then, you really owe me one. You know, like, that doesn't make any, I'm sitting here as, like, a rational human being. Right. I was like, yeah, but that doesn't make any sense. Like, my character wouldn't do that. And so we do it. And they're like, oh, great, you know, because you're on this, like, dark stage in the bowels of CBS, you know, like the old school CBS, like, yeah, in
the one in the valley.
No, not Radford. The one like in, like, Hollywood.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. Like, they shoot American Idol over there.
Yeah, they shoot so that. Well. They shoot, like, the.
But it's like the basement one.
Yeah, yeah. It's like these, like, this is the bowels of CBS. Like, you know, like the Minotaur is going to jump out and, like, rip your head off down there. So, and you're in this, like, dank, like, dark stage, and you don't even see, like, the people are, like, up in some spaceship over there. Yeah, okay, so everything, you know, like, voices from above. And so we do the scene, and I'm like, okay, well, you really owe me one. Hey, Danny, you really owe me one, Maroney. And she comes in, and she goes, I thought you were going to do the voice. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I can do the voice after I... She goes, the elf isn't doing the voice. And she, like, totally, like, calls me out to the director up there. They're like, oh, yeah, elf, just do the voice. And I'm just like, I'm like, no shit. Kevin's mom is totally take a piss out of my friggin' my Santa's little helper, bro. I'm like, so, like, I did this, like, because, like, everybody, she was, like, God love her, but she's, like, she was such a pain in the butt on set questions about everything. She was, like, trying to direct the stuff.
I just love, I'm not trying to put this bee on blast, but.
It was just so funny to me. I was like, I totally just got fucked by Kevin's mom in the bowels of CBS. Like, elf, just do that. Because nobody wanted to deal with her. Like, she was being such a
piece.
Like,
they didn't even care about the narrative.
Yeah, yeah. They were just like, yeah, whatever, like, the story doesn't matter, but it just as long as she shuts up.
Dude, lunch is getting cold.
Yeah, I mean, they were just like, yeah, did not care. Like, elf, do the voice. And so I'm just like, okay. So I'm like, okay, Maroney, you really owe me one, you know? Like, and then I guess it worked out. But I really remember,
is that,
like,
the one that aired?
No, I mean, it's.
Did they air the regular?
I have it, you know. I have it on one of my reels, but it's so funny. And so that was it. And I think it was Santa's Little Helper.
Santa's Little Helper.
You know, that's a good one that I've got on my IMDb, I think.
That's so funny.
That I always remember, because I remember leaving that place in the, you know, CVS, that old place, and just, like, being shell-shocked. I was like, this is so, like, what just fucking happened? Like, did that just, like, happen? That was so weird.
In my mind, you just, like, leave her dressing room. You're, like, putting your shirt on because she actually, like, fucked you.
I'm like,
lipstick on your face, and you're like, I guess.
I mean, it's nuts. I just remember that. But I remember, like, I don't know, the bro, the main guy, just, like, because she was asking all these questions and just, I don't know, like, stuff that didn't, but she was making it about her,
right,
you know? And the you Women. Know, these dudes that do this, like, day in, day out, are just like, yeah, can we just shoot this, you know, rolling their eyes and, like, it doesn't matter, just stop.
You're one day, bro, come on.
I'm looking at him like, what the, what?
I don't know, buddy.
Yeah, you owe me one, Maroney. I mean, it's so that was, I mean, but it was just those type of experiences that, you go, of course, this is Los Angeles. This is this, like, wonderfully weird make-believe land that sells, like, dreams and hopes. And this is all part and parcel
to it. And Kevin's mom can still fuck you over on a daytime TV show.
Oh, my God. She was just, I was like, what the fudge? Like, Kevin's mom just straight boned me.
Straight
as, like, as fucking Santa's helper. Santa,
that's
like,
so good. That's a great credit.
Yeah.
Santa's helper.
I think it's Santa's helper, I think.
That's really funny.
Yeah, no, I have the video. It's crazy. I mean, it's like, really. I mean, you look at it and you're just like, how are they getting away with this stuff? You know, but I mean, the soaps, I think, have suffered. I mean, I don't even know if they're on anymore.
I think some of them are, like, online or
something. Yeah, yeah. I mean, because that was the day and age where,
now they're just, like, on Twitch or something.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but it's interesting. I mean, that was a whole, I mean, they came about because women traditionally stayed home. And, right. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they were
they needed
soap operas. Soap, which was
stories.
Wash soap. You know, that was what it was. So they needed something while they were hanging out, and then oh, women get to vote. They don't have jobs and shit. Like,
don't
is...
worry, they're still paying us.
Yeah, 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 there we go. Thank you. The only thing that I'm
silver
lining. Yeah, I take solace in that. I mean, shit. I mean, geez, Louise.
I mean, by next year, it's like you guys will have equal pay, and then what will I have?
Oh,
nothing.
Yeah, yeah, I got nothing.
So the last kind of question, which actually kind of is all in the vein of what we've been talking about, even with the jobs, has there been a moment? Because ideally, what I, with the podcast in general, with sort of having these conversations with people, aside from just having, you know, a fun and engaging conversation, I do hope that the people that listen to it are, you know, sort of inspired to, for whatever it is that they are doing, continue to do it. And so a question I always like to ask my guests is, has there been a time where you basically... not like a, I guess rock bottom is a good way to say it, but it seems like more complicated than that. Did you ever have a time where you thought like that was the end of me pursuing this thing that I'm pursuing? And then what was that thing and how did you sort of get over that hump to keep doing it? Because I feel like, especially with an arts-centered, any sort of life where you're trying to actually, you know, potentially make your living, whether it be, you know, sculpting or jewelry or music or film or whatever, you know, any sort of actual art.
You're kind of questioning, like, what's the darkest night of the soul type
of thing? Like, what was the darkest night before the dawn and what pulled you back, basically, to keep going? Yeah,
you know, it's, I got to be honest with you. I'm super blessed because I haven't gotten there yet. And, awesome. You know, I'm like last year was difficult for me because I didn't work at all until I booked Still the King. And then that was the biggest job that I had had, that I have had in my career, as of yet. I know it sounds funny, but, and I'm not a religious person by any means, but, the idea that there have been so many things in my life that have given me great experiences and I've fallen down and I have screwed up and I have had my heart broken and I have cried and I have laughed and all that stuff. But there's never any time where I said, I can't do this anymore, or it's just too much. Or, I mean, even if I'm not in Los Angeles, you know, attempting to be an actor in that respect, I mean, I'll still be doing community theater in some town. Mm-hmm. You know, so
what do you think it is that like gives you that? Because that's, to be honest, in the however many episodes I've recorded now, because I haven't released everything that I've recorded, but like I have not heard that answer.
You know,
everybody has one of those moments. So I feel like this perspective is something I really want to explore.
I think like what I told you guys, I mean, I'm really lucky because, number one, I knew what I wanted to do from a very early age. Mm-hmm. I mean, even before my friend passed away, I was really finding a lot of joy in doing theater and being in front of people. I mean, that's what it was, you know. And I remember being at the dinner table with my family and, like, making them laugh so much that they sent me to my room, you know, because, like, you know, like, and I was always this, like, spaz kid, and I was, like, a Ritalin child for very, you know, for, like, 10 years, like, you know. But I always, I don't know, I always had this need to be in front of people or try to, like, I don't know if it's make people laugh or something, because that's not what it's about, but it's all about, not waiting around and not, like, waiting for somebody else to give you the chance. Like, now more than ever, it's like, there's no excuses. There's just no excuses for it. Like, unless you want to, like, get into it. And it's easy. And it's easy to get into a self-doubt cycle.
Totally.
You know? But that's when I go to fucking Costco. And I shit you not that I I try to count my blessings that I get to live in California. I'm a working actor. Mm-hmm. You know, I drive a, you know, a sweet 2005 Saturn. You know, all manual locks, hey-o. Manual. You know, and if somebody runs into my car, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like so it goes, you know, and that's just part. But and also I'm super lucky because my parents have always been very supportive of that's my decision. Great. To be. I mean, there were certainly times where my father would say, "Are you sure you don't want to have a backup plan?" You know, like, and I said, this is what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. You know, this was my
clearly not spelling
supposed to. No, but you know, I'm just not good at anything else either. So I just know that, and this idea of like having faith that you're where you're supposed to be. I mean, the decisions that you make and the decisions that life makes for you and the mix of those is who you are. Mm-hmm. And if you find your spot of like, I mean, certainly, like I said, I mean, I've been in some dark times in my life, you know, where I didn't see a light out personally. But that didn't mean that my art didn't thrive at that time, or that what I was able to, the story that I was able to tell, or the stuff that I was able to access wasn't.
Did you use your art to work through those?
Absolutely.
Times?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that takes us back to there's no one way, you know, there's no method that works for everybody. You need to pick and choose the tools, and the tools will evolve and the tools will change depending on you growing up and becoming. I mean, like Dave, like I saw that great quote, like getting older is just the you that you were supposed to be the whole time, or something like mm-hmm. that. And so you look back at like the 18-year-old me was a different person, you know, and now I'm a 40-year-old child still, you know. But just, you know, trying to maintain that perspective. And also all the shit that we think is so important, it's not. It's just not. We take ourselves way too seriously. And I mean, I struggle with, and when I do get worked up and when I do think like I didn't book the gig, and I'm like, why am I doing this? Like me and my buddy, who's more successful than me, one of my best friends, Zach Knighton, shout out to him.
What up, Zach?
Yeah, he's my buddy. I mean, he's one of my best friends, and he's the reason that I moved to LA, but I've seen him have higher highs and lower lows. And so always putting your life into perspective and saying that, you know, it's like you said, I mean, now you're thinking about not only balancing your career, but your relationship and maybe having a kid and all this stuff. And, you know, there's so many things that you can try to balance, you know, that might take away from, and it's not that that doesn't, that might also help you, you know, find out what the next you that you're supposed to be. But just having a good sense of humor and just not, it's okay. Like, don't trip. I'm seriously. I mean, that's the thing. It's like we get so worked up and our lives are so important and somebody dinged my fucking car and then, oh, the peas at the fucking Ralph's weren't there and all this shit. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. All right.
Well, to be fair, he talked about the peas the last time he was here, Justin. Jesus Christ, if you guys can't restock peas, I'm going to have to go somewhere else.
It's like, fucking take a moment.
No, totally.
Breathe.
I get that.
In the grand scheme of things, you know, it doesn't matter.
Man, you spent so much time just like talking to us. Thanks, buddy.
Well, you know, I love, you know, I could go. I
know you have another podcast recording right after this. So many.
I wish.
Knocking down that door.
I wish. But yeah, we wax philosophical about.
No,
you know,
that's sort of like, obviously I enjoy sort of making people laugh and being funny. That's always fun. But I feel like everybody has their own philosophy on this business. And I think that that's part of why I started the podcast.
Sure.
I just wanted a reason to have like sit people down and be like, what is it that you do that makes you keep doing this?
Yeah.
And how do you survive it?
If you don't mind me asking, like, what's some of the more interesting answers that you've found? Like, how do people find the will to keep going?
I mean, one of my favorite anecdotals was actually Jason Rogel, who our friend
J-Ro. Happy birthday, buddy. Your birthday yesterday.
Belated.
Yeah, no diggity.
No, when he was on, he has such a good, and it, this one story, I almost feel like totally encapsulates.
And
the
Jay's been doing
me.
It for like he's got 10 years on.
Yeah, and he's been killing the game
because
too.
He's been here. He grew up in town.
He
didn't he?
He moved here early on because he finished school here. But I
feel like his mom and
maybe he
was sister.
Oh my God, Jason!
Twinsy.
I'm sorry, I forgot this. We talked about it too.
VA
forgetting all of the important parts.
No,
but
I mean obviously that's the impact that I have on it. You know, I come into the room, answer a few questions, you forget about
everything.
Just broke the wheel.
Yeah, it's a ship. You know, that's the just reinvented that dish.
He has like this story though that he told me where it was. After Zack Stone, and he had booked the Mistletoes, that ABC Family movie, before Zack Stone. So it didn't come out until, like, December of 2013.
He loves that. Every December, he loves getting the mail.
So it was, like, 6 months after Zack Stone, though, right? And I guess in between Zack Stone airing or whatever and Mistletoes dropping, like, he didn't work a lot. Like, he didn't have a lot of work. And he was like, I'm in my apartment. I'm eating ramen. I'm basically having a midlife crisis. He's like, I'm pretty much Fantine from Les Miserables. And I turn on the TV and Mistletoes is on.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm like barely able to pay my bills and I'm watching myself on television.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I was crying into my bowl of ramen. Like, I dreamed a dream. And he's just, and I was like, I think that that moment, because for him, he really cited like working with people like Loretta Devine and like these other, you know, bigger heroes of his as a reason. Yeah. And like for me, like that is that always those kind of stories seem to echo more with me because like, you know, for as much as we even talked off mic about like the show that we worked on together, like that moment that I had on set with Tom Wilson where he sat with me in Video Village and
treated you like a human being.
But also, after many conversations and could see that I was like, you know, I was, like I said, I was 22, 21. Sure. Like, he could see that I was like really trying to do something. He had a moment where he looked at me and he made eye contact and he said, Virginia, I've been in this business for a really long time and trust me, you're going to go places.
Yeah.
And even if that was just him being encouraging, that was enough for me for like the next year and a half of filming because I was like, Tom Wilson said that I have a future.
I mean, it's
and
the
that's
same
what,
thing.
It was amazing.
Blair Underwood told me, he's like, oh, you'll be doing this, man.
And
no
you were
problem.
Like,
whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm like, holy moly, I made it. Oh, gosh.
I made it.
This is it.
I can do it.
I'm going to be a star.
And then now you are.
Oh,
Starman.
Yeah. Look, there you go. Starman.
So, are you coming back for season two?
You know, if the gods will it so,
will,
it will be it
will
be
it
done.
Be.
Please. Yes. I hope so. I hope. There is no official word yet, but I'm certainly keeping
but
my fingers crossed.
But you got the
crossed.
Season two re-up, which is the good
you
news.
You know, yeah.
So
CMT picked up Still the King for season two, so that's awesome. And even if I don't get to be a part of it, it was, you know, it was a blast. And
it was fun working with Billy
Ray.
Oh,
my God.
He seems like a super nice guy.
Totally down to earth and genuine. Like, my attitude is like when you go on, I always call it going on to somebody's playground. Mm-hmm. When you go on to set, you know, and it's somebody's set, it's their set, you know. So you go on, and he's like, hey, man, what's going on? I saw your stuff. It was great, man. It's just great, you know. I'm really excited you bring so much. I mean, like, you know.
That's so great.
It's just super welcoming.
Yeah.
And everybody, I mean, I was shooting in Nashville, and I had such a blast.
Beautiful town.
Everybody was fantastic and, you know, ate my weight and hot chicken. And,
I was going to say barbecue, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of hot chicken. I mean, literally where I was staying.
Speaking
of
IBS.
I could pee on the on the hot chicken place. I mean, it was like right there. So
Hot chicken the other night, and I was like dead.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that was the thing. I was like, I would always like get it. Like, I'm like, ah, man, I'd like eat it. Like, I was there for 12 days, and I'd like probably eat it 7 of the 12. And I'd be like, oh, my God, what am I doing? I can't do this anymore. And I'd be like, I probably shouldn't get it. Before I get on the airplane, and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I'm eating it. I'm like, why am I doing this?
You're,
you know,
sweating.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like sweating and like shitting all over. Like, you know, like these poor people.
Yeah, you shouldn't like,
farting the whole way
at
the airplane.
Shouldn't
I was like, why would I do this? You know, it's like that first time you drink too much tequila. You're like, why? Oh God.
Oh God.
It's like, I'm never eating hot chicken again. And I'm like, psych.
You got here and you were like, where's Hot Chicken?
I know. I'm like, now I'm jonesing for it, evidently. But no, it was super special, and those guys are fantastic. And even if I don't get to be a part of it, you know, I was grateful for the opportunity.
That's so great.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a super fun character. I mean, I asked Potsy, one of the creators of the show, and he directed it and show ran the thing. I said, well, what do you want? You want me to, like, start at, like, a 4, and then we can, like, build to 11? You know, like, because, you know, I didn't know what they want, you know. And he's like, no, man, just do 11. Just do 11. Yeah. And so, you know, I was like, all right, you know. So I was when I was talking to Libby, I was like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's like super cartoony a little bit, you know. But it really lived. I felt like it lived pretty well in the world.
No, it definitely plays. Like, and you've got a good Walter White underwear entrance, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah, I got that, and the, you know, the dad and the, you don't support me, and so, you know, it was great. Yeah. I mean, it was.
You don't support me.
Yeah, I mean, it was super fun because, and I don't know. I mean, I try not to. I don't ad lib at all. Like, you know, people work very hard on to get these words down, and so, you know, I work very hard. I mean, I'm not one of those people that can look at a script and then, like, know it. Like, I have to work at it. Like, I have to sit there and drill it and walk it and talk it and say it and put it on my iPad and pod and listen to it while I, you know, it's like, whatever thing works for you. So I was so lucky that these guys had done such a great job with the script that it was, all I had to do was memorize the lines.
Yeah.
And literally the rest was done for you because they did such a good job with the script and the material. And so as an actor, that's just one of those things, once again, you know, like super grateful and super lucky to have that experience and that opportunity, really.
Good.
Because, you know, if you get into a position where you're like, I don't know about this, a lot of the stuff you go in for and you do this stuff and you're like, well, what is, you know, what the hell is going on here? I have no idea. Like,
they're like, it'll be in green screen, don't worry.
Don't worry, it really doesn't matter, you know. Like, it doesn't matter what you're saying or what you're doing.
But I'm not wearing the right costume. Doesn't matter.
We'll fix it in post.
You can just keep your eyes closed. We'll go ahead and just reopen them in post.
That's actually fine. You don't even need to be here.
we need an eye line. That's it.
Yeah. But so, I mean, it's like, that's what I had a teacher that would say, you know, in Shakespeare, it's like all the directing is in the writing. You don't need to, it's like right there, you know. And so that was a real blessing. Absolutely.
Love it when friends are working. That's always good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Are you working on it? Is anything else coming out that you want to promote? Any?
You know, I think I'm going to be on Girl Meets World on the 19th.
That's awesome.
I just did Nikki, Ricky, Dicky, and Dawn.
Oh my God, did you really?
Yeah, I just worked on that.
That's Steven's uncle's show. Like, so he's like the creator of it. Oh, Matthew? Okay. Did you meet Matt?
Maybe. So there was a lot of people there.
I was
going
to say, there's like a million.
It was the Renaissance Fair.
A couple showrunners.
It was the Renaissance Fair episode.
I'll ask him about you because,
I was, this is a good one. I was Turkey Leg Salesman. That's another one for the books. So, you know, but I mean, it goes back to that Bryan Cranston thing. It's like, I'm not going to turn. I mean, like, you know what? I want to work. So I love it.
I will
sell the hell
out of that turkey leg.
You know?
Thanks for coming by, man. This was great.
Hey, thank you, Virginia. Thank you both. You guys have been great.
Bow, bow, bow.
So, best of luck with the rest of the pods.
Thanks,
and
man.
The casts. And
both pods and casts.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Awesome.